What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Speaking of the mayor's indictment, 18-count indictment. Craig Murdoch, New Orleans criminal defense attorney, is here to talk to us about that. Craig, welcome to the show.
Newell, thank you very much. I'm the leadoff batter on a very strong show tonight, so hopefully I can set the table for you.
Well, Craig, let's jump right into this. An 18-count indictment, a lot of salacious details, some we already knew as a result of some great reporting by Fox 8 and others that had revealed to us a lot of what was going on in the background. Didn't seem to move the needle much for the mayor. It continued on. And it seems as though when you read through this indictment, it kind of made her case worse instead of better.
I think that's very true. And the evidence of the cover-up is significant, it's strong, and it sort of overwhelms what I think are some obvious weaknesses with the prosecution of the wire fraud case. It's a strong prosecution case. The wire fraud involves some novel legal theories, but the obstruction evidence is going to make this very difficult to defend. There's some issues with whether we're criminalizing something that should have been handled in the employee. I'm not an expert on government human resources operations, but whether this should have been handled in a human resources manner, obviously, as you and I both know, the mayor has sort of acted almost as if she was some sort of imperial overlord who was above the law at times, and this certainly is bringing her down to earth.
What was really incredible to me, Craig, and I know that you advise your clients all the time, I said this earlier with Tommy Tucker, more often than not, the federal government doesn't ask questions of you, if you're the target especially, that they don't already know the answer to, otherwise known as a perjury trap. And it seems as though these two individuals, both Vapi and Cantrell, stepped right into it.
Completely agree. And that is going to be the hardest part of this indictment to defend for both of them. Vapi lying to the federal agents about whether they were having an intimate affair when there's a mountain of text messages that say otherwise. And then the mayor lying to the grand jury, submitting an affidavit saying she complied fully with the subpoena when it turns out that there were hundreds of deleted deleted WhatsApp messages that were not turned over. And for the mayor, this was done in June of 2004. So she had an attorney at that point. And it makes it very hard for her to say, I didn't understand the subpoena. I thought the subpoena was vague. A lot of these defenses might be available to her if she was just, a normal person off the street who didn't have a sophisticated attorney representing her. But I guarantee you that Eddie was, one of my trial ad professors at Tulane Law School. And I guarantee you, I've known this guy for 20 years. He absolutely advised her everything she needed to do to comply with the subpoena. And so she's going to have a hard time really navigating that situation. There are a lot of kind of standard run-of-the-mill defenses to this, but I don't see where they're going to be available to her. I also don't see where they're going to be available to Vapi, because it's a pretty straightforward question. Are you involved in an intimate relationship or a sexual relationship with the mayor? And he denied it to a federal officer, and they have mountains of evidence to say otherwise. And, it is very tough, without somebody else, without the person, the other person being involved, it is very difficult to prove a sexual relationship. But based on what we've seen in the indictment, I don't think they're going to have a problem doing that at all.
So what if you were? I don't really understand. I mean, you know, the reality is, and let me ask the question this way. I have reservations as to whether or not the federal government would have even brought this case but for the obstruction and the lying in the grand jury and lying to federal agents.
Completely, 110% agree with you on that. Without question, the cover-up is where the meat of the case is going to be. And I agree with you. Could this have been handled in some sort of HR context? Is the government criminalizing what should be a human resources issue? I think those are things that are going to be litigated in this case in pretrial motions and things like that. And it is fairly novel. I mean, this is not the standard, corruption that we see from politicians. I know this was a similar situation with the Nashville mayor. I think in 2018 or 2019, she was involved with a member of her security team in a sexual relationship, and they were charging things and all of that. But I agree with you that this is kind of novel. They're prosecuting kind of a routine human resources issue. Now it's in the political context, and the taxpayers are on the hook for this. But as you know, this travel is basically going to be presumed legitimate travel on behalf of the mayor. She has latitude as to who's on her executive protection team. If you are on her executive protection team, it does not mean that from the time you leave the house to the time you return to your house that, you know, you're off the clock or, you know, you're going to get paid for the entire time. So whether they're having a relationship or not, or he's having dinner with her or not while they're on these trips, I think is going to be, a very strong defense to that. To the wire fraud counts. Also, you know, in terms of the wire fraud, I would expect that Cantrell's defense would be to minimize her conduct and minimize her involvement in this. Well, he submitted it. I didn't really look at it. I just signed it as a matter of course. I just always sign the expense approval and the timesheets. I did that for my whole staff and sort of that this is a routine thing. That's being prosecuted. So I do think there's some strong defenses to that, but also, you know, the cover up, they're going to argue that her, you know, being mayor, the prosecution's going to argue that her being mayor enabled her to, further the scheme where it might have gotten caught if this was lower level employees, but because she's mayor, there's not a lot of oversight here. Nobody's going to question it. So she thought she could just continuously get away with it for a period of years.
Craig, what happens in the case, you know, and I get what you're saying. I signed the sheets and everything else. But the fact of the matter is you're held ultimately responsible for that. If you're going to do it, you have to take it seriously. But more importantly, in the case where she actually has definitive knowledge, active knowledge of the fact that he spent the night at the Pontalba and was paid for it. And, you know, I mean, and he's never spent the night when she was at home, with her family or even when she was at home alone. But at the Pontalba, there's a whole different scenario there that's and presented, and you're being paid overtime to spend a night with your boss.
And they're referring to it in the text messages as our apartment, meaning that he's no longer in the employment context, in relation to that building because he's going in there and he's claiming some type of domicile there. I don't know if it's a full domicile or some type of residence there. So yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a problem for their defense. I mean, again, it's still probably, this still probably could be an HR issue. But the cover up again is, and the idea that they're, you know, lying to investigators and lying to them. I mean, again, the other thing, Newell, is they mentioned that she lied to the media about the affair. But as any media member knows, you know, when was the last time, you know, has a politician ever not lied about something? I mean, it's kind of par for the course. I don't exactly know how that's, you know, a criminalization of sort of things that politicians do every day.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, I think it was probably thrown in there to show the extent that they'll go to in order to try and cover up this relationship for what reason is beyond
Absolutely.
Me. I do believe that there's one other set of circumstances that are a little problematic for her as well. She's at a conference in Miami. He's at a conference on Martha's Vineyard as a result of his appointment to Hano. She has a desire to meet him. She flies on the city's dime from Miami to Martha's Vineyard and has no business there, wasn't scheduled to be there. In fact, is hiding out, so nobody else there actually sees her in Martha's Vineyard. The communications, I think, are damning and compelling, but yet the city's paying for this. And that is one of the things that, and he's admitting that he's not going to be participating in all of the functions and activities of that event that Hano's paying for in order to meet up and hook up with her.
I think you're absolutely right on this. That is the most problematic count of the wire fraud indictment. And it probably sets the tone where if that one is, where she has no business being there and she's billing the city, then why are we going to give her the benefit of the doubt on some of these other travel counts? I could see a jury absolutely thinking that. I agree. It's absolutely problematic. But, you know, one of the things we have not discussed in our conversation is that some of these loss amounts that the prosecution has come up with here are somewhat insignificant. I mean, if you're talking, you know, what would a flight, you know, a first class flight to Martha's Vineyard be, you know, $1,200, $1,500? I don't know that she, you know, she's on salary, so she's not exactly billing for the time, you know, a couple meals. I mean, we're probably talking about $3,000 loss here total, maybe five. But we all know she likes to live a little high on the hog. But $5,000 loss, and that doesn't really, you know, I mean, in the Eastern District of Louisiana, the buy-in is usually some, you know, for a prosecution is usually somewhere north of $80,000 to $100,000. I don't know that would even be on the radar, but for the cover-up, but for the continuous the continuous relationship where they're continuing to bill the city for these things. But yeah, that is probably the most, that is the most problematic count on the wire fraud. The fact that she just got up and left to go see him there does not appear, at least the prosecution's not saying, and there doesn't appear to be a legitimate government purpose to this. And she billed the city for it. So, yeah, I
Craig, what do you read into interim U.S. Attorney Michael Simpson's statement saying multiple times that this investigation is ongoing? We are presented with an indictment here that's actually a superseding indictment as it relates to VAPI. And it's kind of curious that we've already had criminal defendants who have pled guilty and are, in fact, cooperating with the federal government that are not part of this indictment. Might we anticipate another superseding indictment?
So that is a question that a lot of people have asked me over the weekend. And I think what's going to happen here is in the context of plea negotiations – As you know, she's listed as politician one or politician A, city official one or city official A in the Randy Farrell indictment. And that's clearly her. Now, the issue with the Randy Farrell indictment is the things that she got, a cell phone, a dinner at Ruth's Chris, some Saints tickets, are so insignificant that, again, it makes it hard to bring an expensive federal prosecution over what probably is a couple thousand dollars worth of stuff. But I definitely
Someone lost their job over this.
Well, that's true. I don't know what.
You know, if she's willing to take that kind of action for as, and you tell me if I'm unfairly characterizing this term, but peanuts, that's her stupidity. But she
went the
extra step to actually impact an innocent individual's life and livelihood who is trying to do the right thing. Unlike the mayor, for the most part, in large measure of what she was doing relative to leading the city, that I find absolutely completely obnoxious and mystified that we have not yet seen an indictment or otherwise relative to those acts.
Well, and her defense to that is going to be, as the mayor, I have broad authority to hire and fire whoever I want. He's going to come up with some, justification for it that probably may not pass the sniff test for us, but could possibly pass the sniff test for a jury. But I do believe that they are holding that one back to assist in bringing her in for plea negotiations. And if she insists on going to trial on the Vappy matter, I think you'll see a superseding indictment against her. Or even a second case against her involving the Farrell situation. I don't think there's any doubt that that's in the back pocket, and that's what they're going to use as leverage to bring her in and get her to plea guilty. Now, the question would be, is what would her charges be? Could it be some malfeasance in office? Could it be honest services fraud? All of those things, come into play on something like that. So, yeah, I do think there are more charges out there against her. They've been investigating this for 3 years. The wire fraud counts that she was indicted on are a very narrow part of kind of what's out there against her. And I know a lot of people, when that indictment came out, were very surprised. They're like, this is it. But the corruption and the cover up, evidence of the cover up is so strong in that they had to bring that one first, I think.
We have a lot of other people that were named in the course of the Farrell indictment as well. Gilbert Montano being one, as having received things of value too. Many folks are suspicious as to whether or not he's now a cooperating witness.
I think that probably is a fair statement. Again, there's no way to know until after the case is over. But I think that's probably what's going on. And I think the idea is we're going to hold this one back, and we're going to bring, if you want to go to trial, that's fine, but you're going to have to either go to trial on these additional counts or have a second trial after the first. And from her perspective, she is not a independently wealthy politician by any stretch of the imagination. The idea that she's going to face two federal trials, I don't know how she would actually pay for that. So, I mean, that is going to be a strong incentive for her to plea.
And I gotta imagine that the federal government's going to be asking for jail time. This is not going to be something different.
I would think so. Though, as you know, the loss amount is what drives sentencing in a federal case. The loss amount here is about $70,000. Wire fraud has some enhanced penalties in the sentencing range. I did a back of the envelope calculation, and I thought she was between 70 and 87 months. Now, people may disagree with me on that, but that's probably about where she is. And then the obstruction counts could very easily run consecutive. She's probably looking about 2 to 3 years on the obstruction counts. So she could be looking at about 10 to 12 years in jail on this.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Craig Mardoch, New Orleans criminal defense attorney. Appreciate the time, the insight, and I'm sure we will be visiting with you again in the very near
future. Thank you for having me on, Noel. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. When we come back, we're going to visit with Sidney Torres, Ivy Waste owner. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the New Orleans City Council does not have to sign a contract with Henry Consulting to provide sanitation services for the French Quarter and other portions of downtown. We'll get his thoughts when we return. Stay with us.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.